Hello, everybody. This is Stu Smith, and we are doing another two through and after with a Naval Academy graduate and former Navy SEAL, Jake Zwig. And we are honored to have you, Mr. Jake. Thank you.
Stu, man, I really appreciate you giving me this shine, man, and having me on your podcast. You know, you're one of those guys from the Naval Academy that's kind of, you know, you're bigger than life, man. So to be on here with you, I'm just pumped, man. I appreciate you.
Well, thank you. Way too honest. Screw that up. Never mind. So anyway.
It's all good,
yeah.
Stu.
Way too nice. Well, I was 91.
Yeah. So like when I came in, you were going out with Alton and the crew.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. He and I were Bud's classmates.
Yep.
Yep. So I appreciate you taking the time to do this because I think your story is great, you know, especially for young men and women who are thinking about serving. And, you know, there's always so many different options to go. You know, there's the service academy option, there's the ROTC option, there's the enlistment option. And, you know, it's nice to hear what people are, you know, how their journey went, you know, their struggles, their successes, as well as what they're doing now. So that's really what we're going to do. We're going to take everybody through your life's journey into what you're doing now, and we'll explain, you know, the world that you've created for yourself.
Yeah, it's crazy world, man. I was just laughing with my wife. She's in here yelling at me about all these car parts I got on the floor in here. And I told her, I said, be lucky they're not covered in diesel fuel, you know? So we'll talk, man. I'm eclectic. You know, I've been around the world a couple times and, you know, very unique story, very unique upbringing. So we'll go into it and hopefully your listeners will love it. And
yeah, well,
as good as we can do, man.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's your story, you know, and we all have a unique story. And the one thing that I have found is that we're all experts at making mistakes.
Oh.
Right. You know, we're all experts at making mistakes and growing from them and figuring out around it. So tell us, you know, who was Jake Zwig before you joined the military? What was your life like? Where'd you grow up and like sports and stuff? What'd you do?
So very interesting background. My mom is a little 5 foot tall white lady, and she was running around with the Black Panthers in the early 70s. And she hooked up with my dad and had me and realized that, you know, growing up in LA in the middle of Watts on 115th Street probably wasn't the best thing for me. So she drove me up to Washington State and dropped me off with my grandparents. And, you know, the first part of my story that is interesting. So my mom drops me off. She stays maybe 24 hours. And this is coming straight from my grandmother who was there. Witnessed the whole thing. And my mom, grandfather went outside to load up the car and send her back to LA. And my grandfather came in and was like, hey, what are we gonna call this kid? My grandmother was like, hey, he has a name. And my grandfather's Jewish from Detroit and was like first generation right after the Holocaust. His sister was in the Holocaust. And so just, you know, huge lineage of toughness coming from that side of the family. And so my grandfather was like, look, I'm not calling no Jewish grandson Jomo Kenyatta Coleman, right? Because my mom was just running in the craziness. And so my grandmother kind of looked at him. He was like, well, we'll call him Jake for now. And so fast forward 5 years, my mom hadn't come back yet. I started daycare and I was the only African-American in Puyallup, Washington. And so my grandfather didn't want any problems. So when he enrolled me in daycare, he gave me his last name. So, you know, no big deal. I'm growing up as Jake Zwig, you know, have no clue that I have a different name. And then my mom came back about 5 and a half. And then she met my stepdad, which was transformational in my life. Growing up with my grandparents, you know, was super awesome. Like my grandfather's awesome. My grandmother was tough as nails. I used to get my butt beat for missing all the SpaghettiOs in the SpaghettiO can. And I like, even to this day, I know that sound opening underneath her sink where the trash can was. And I'd be like, oh God, did I get all the SpaghettiOs? So my mom, first grade. So I went to kindergarten in Puyallup. And then first grade, I moved out with my dad, Bob. and we moved out to Silicon, Washington. And so my dad, I tell everybody, I'm gonna get back to the name part of it, but my dad spent 4 years in prison, Caucasian guy, tough as nails, you know, drove truck, but he was also brilliant. And he had straight A's in engineering at University of Washington, had one more semester to go in MEC-E, and decided that he didn't want to sit behind a desk his whole life. And so it was kind of this dichotomy between this tough truck driver, but we built a water wheel in my backyard. It turned for 35 years and pumped water to a water tank because he didn't want to pay the water bill to water the grass. So anyway, long story short, 9 years old, I'm going to a wrestling tournament. I said, hey, Mom, I need this birth certificate for this wrestling tournament. She whips out this birth certificate, gives it to me. I'm like, hey, this ain't me. This is Jomo Kenyatta Coleman. She said, oh, yeah, that's your real name. Don't worry about it. Just tell me Jake Swig used this birth certificate. I said, wait a minute. What's going on here? She said, I don't know. Your grandfather changed your name, okay? So just this is your birth certificate. Go to the wrestling tournament. So at 9 years old, I learned I had a different name. And to shut the name part off, when I went to the Naval Academy, they were like, you got two options. You can either be Jomo Kenyatta Coleman or you get your name changed. So I went before the judge, got my name changed, been Jake Swig ever since. I'm the only male, so I'm carrying the Swig side of the family for Harry Swig, my grandfather, which is pretty awesome. I got three boys. They're all Swigs, so that's pretty awesome. So it'll be rolling for a while.
Nice.
So anyway, I grew up in a small house in Silicon, Washington, had a creek through my yard. We had ducks and geese and chickens. And I tell everybody, like, I grew up pretty much as country as you could grow up, but we lived in like a little enclave, which was Silicon, Washington. But I was two blocks from the water. I had a boat, a little 12-foot aluminum boat that I could wheel down. My dad built me a boat trailer with these three huge 10-speed tires. So at like 8 years old, I could tow the boat down to the water, put it in the water, had a little engine on it, little 1.2. And nice. I would tool, like, I drive all over the place, just right in front of the house, basically, in the Puget Sound, fishing, you know, picking crabs. I tell everybody this is one of the parts that, like, I grew up not understanding. I was really soft coming out of my grandparents' house. And when I got with my stepfather, like, I learned what hard work really was. You know, every morning in the summer I had a chores list. Chores list normally took me between 2 and 4 hours to do. Wasn't allowed to go play before that chore list was done. You know, everything from, like, there was a huge oyster bed on the other side at the prison. And so he'd say, hey, go get 4 buckets of oysters. Get in the boat, drive over. Those were the easy chores, right?
Yeah, those are fun.
Yeah, but like when he'd say, hey, I see set the shrimp trap, I'd be like, dang. So setting the shrimp trap was easy. Go out there about 2 miles, drop it off in like 300 feet of water, put some cans of cat food in it, drop it off, no big deal. And I was so little, you know, you're not realizing, okay, 3 days later, 2 days later, he gonna tell you, go pull that shrimp trap. So you're like, oh, easy chore day, right? Go set the shrimp trap, boom, come back in. Then 3 days later, I get punched in the face and chore list would be like, go pull the shrimp trap. And so here I was 8, 9 years old, big, huge, probably 3 foot circumference, plastic shrimp trap. And I got to pull it up from 200 feet. And so it would be like, pull a couple strokes, hit it on the cleat, tie it off, rest.
Nice.
Pull a couple strokes. And so like, I don't know how long it took me. You know, you're a kid, you out there in the middle of the water, your little aluminum boat, your life jacket on. But shoot, I can remember it was probably till 12 before I could actually just pull it up. You know, so.
Well, it sounds like you built a good work ethic at an early age.
I've been thinking about that because my kids, personally, I don't like their work ethic. Two of them are okay. The oldest one, not so much, but we're going to work on that.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, I just want to hang out with my dad, right? Like, I had a dad, and like, if he was going to do something, I was trying to go with him. And so a lot of times, you know, like I tell the story, you know, there was a wood permit. You could get a wood permit for Fort Lewis. So I spent half my time in that boat, and I spent the other half in a ranger training center on Fort Lewis. And so on Fort Lewis, you could get a wood permit. It was called 24-hour wood permit. You could cut wood for 24 hours if the trees were falling down.
Huh.
And we heated our house for the first probably 10 years that I was there with wood. We had a wood fireplace. That's how we heated the house. We didn't have a heating system. And so I can remember 6, 7 years old, he'd get a wood permit. We wake up at 4 in the morning, 3 in the morning on Saturday morning. And we would drive out. It's only about a mile from our house. And he would have already scouted out the trees he wanted. And he would run a chainsaw for 12 hours. And then maybe more than that, because we would split wood all the way to the next day.
Damn.
Like you had 24 hours to actually cut, but you could be out there for 48 hours. And so then Sunday, we'd spend all day Sunday bringing the wood back. And I can remember I was a little kid. I had 2 split mauls and a little 8-pound short sledgehammer to drive the mauls into the wood. And I would maybe split 30 pieces of wood, and he would split 4-cord.
Dang. So,
and then, you know, Sunday we'd make trips back and forth. We had this trailer and a truck, and we'd make trips back, and it would be a huge pile of wood. And then my chore for the next 2 weeks would be to stack wood. You know, and he'd be like, look, I want you to stack 2 rows. You know,
that's really good. I mean, those are not just good work ethic skills. Those are survival skills, too. You know, I mean,
yeah. You know,
that's survival skills that you learn at a very young age.
So I tell people, my dad was a survivalist. And starting at 6, he was learn how to build a fire. He says, fire saves lives. And, you know, I grew up in Pacific Northwest, raining. You know, 6, 7, 8, he'd be like, hey, go start me a fire. And so we had in the back, there was a little fire pit. And I can remember 6, 7, probably 90% failure rate.
Yeah, it's hard to set some wet wood out there.
Yeah,
man.
Pouring rain. And then, you know, you're like, okay, all right. Like by 9, I start the fire every time. He stopped making me do it. But we also went and learned how to trap raccoons. Like we went to trapping course in Washington. So I made a lot of money. First, second, third, fourth grade, I made a ton of money. $2,000-$3,000 a winter trapping raccoons.
In the fur trade?
Yeah, beavers, muskrats, man, I was killing it. And
nice.
So, you know, that early part of my life was really, I tell everybody, like, I didn't realize what I was really getting until I got into sports in middle school.
So invaluable, that early like, side. So tell me this. So what's the next step? What's the next step with the sports? What kind of drove you towards wanting to train and work out?
Yep. So in third grade, my dad started telling me, he said, listen, man, I couldn't afford college. I had dropped out of college. I couldn't afford it. I had to move on with my life. I've been a truck driver my whole life. You ain't going to be a truck driver. And so he drove log trucks sometimes. I used to love to go with him because of rubber tire skidders. He wouldn't let me go. He said, you're not driving truck for a living. And so, but he always would say every day I heard out of his mouth, hey, man, you going to have to figure out how to pay for college. And so it's crazy because my initial kind of thought to that when we started middle school was like, okay, I'm going to get a college scholarship for athletics. And it's funny how it turned out because I knew I had to pay for college. And so wrestling, I was really good at wrestling. And I was okay at football, but I was a midget, right? Like I was 4'8", 4'7", but I was a million miles an hour at all times. And I got that from the work ethic, right? Like I didn't mind the sweat and the grind because I spent 48 hours chopping wood as a 6-year-old. Like it wasn't a big deal. Like working hard in athletics was easy to me. And so in middle school, I loved math and science because I couldn't read. So back up a little bit. First through third grade, I had the same teacher. Long story short, but Mrs. Wyrick, best woman in the world. But I was really destructive because I had ADHD. And my name is Zwig, so I had to sit in the back of class. I have since learned the only place I can sit is in the middle of the classroom in the front row because anything else, I'm distracted. Well, my dad brought a refrigerator box in. And for the first 3 years of school, I sat in a refrigerator box in the back of the classroom and it had a little window that I could open up to see out because I was so disruptive. Well, when the spelling test came, I just closed the window and opened my book. So I got heavy into math and science because I couldn't read and write. I couldn't read, see, like third grade summer, I spent all summer with one of our family friends, a reading specialist, because I couldn't read See Spy Run. And so I didn't get held back. So anyway, I go to middle school and we had this, there's a huge science fair at Washington State. I mean, University of Washington. And the first year, sixth grade, I won the science kid of the year in middle school. And I was into everything, man, like biology, microscopes, like all of that stuff. And in sixth grade in middle school in Washington, you can't do sports. So we went up to University of Washington Science Fair and we did this copper beryllium crystal grow, those big blue crystal things. And I thought it was the dumbest thing in the world. Like there was no skill to it. You just pour in solution, your crystal grows, some guys, I'm like, yo. So I came in after the fair and I said to the science teacher, I said, hey man, give me the book for this Washington Science Fair. I said, I'm gonna see what else is in here. Cause there was a bunch of different events. So hands me the book and there's this mousetrap car competition, like engineering competition. I said, you know, I'm gonna do this. So that I went home, worked for on my car for about a year. I was wrestling that year. So seventh grade year, I was wrestling and I was doing everything. And so I built this mousetrap car. I had, you know, you didn't have YouTube. You couldn't Google, you know, mousetrap car. Now it's a big deal.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. And so put this thing together. I steamed some balsa wood wheels. It was super light. Had these big wheels in the back. And then I double wound the mousetrap spring. So I took the mousetrap spring on. I double wound it. So my mousetrap has so much power. I like supercharged mousetrap. So I go there my seventh grade year. And my car runs 140 feet. Mm. And so I beat everybody by like 60 feet. I beat all the high school seniors. I beat everybody. So I wrestled, played football that year. And then the next year, eighth grade year, I tuned my car up a little bit. I kind of make the front wheel a little bit cleaner. I use graphite on the axles because all the smart kids were using graphite to really make everything spin well. And I got like 160 feet out of my car. And so when I got done, the dean of the engineering department awarded me a full college scholarship to the University of Washington in eighth grade.
Dang.
But it's crazy because I didn't realize like I had achieved the goal that my dad had been telling me since the third grade, right? You got to find a way to pay for college. In my mind, I got a full engineering scholarship to Washington, but I was like, man, like I still got to do good in sports. So I tell this story, you know, we're all made in defeat. You talk about failure. I went undefeated. I lost one match my seventh grade year. I went undefeated my eighth grade year. And I get into high school and I promptly went 15-9. Traveled on the football team, but I went 15-9. I was fat. I was out of shape. I struggled past the second round. You know, I got pinned. I hadn't been on my back in 2 years and I got pinned in the ninth grade.
Yeah. You should have got to up your game a little bit when you go from middle school to high school.
Yeah. You know, but like I got a lot of self-confidence and then you don't know what, you know, I tell everybody this, like Mike Tyson got the best saying in the world. Everybody thinks they're going to win the fight until I punch them in the mouth. And a lot of times like cats like us, Stu, you know how it is, man. Like I'm great. Until you get punched in the mouth and you realize you lose. And then you're like, oh man, I got to go to work. And it's interesting because it happened to me at the Naval Academy too. But so anyway, long story short, like that's where I made a transformation, man. Like I just was like, I'm not losing any more wrestling matches. I started running every day. So I had this 3 mile loop in my town. In the next 3 years of high school, I didn't run 5 days. Like out of the next 3 years, I missed 5 days of running.
Nice.
And so, you know, really dedicated myself to athletics, was killing all the math and science classes at the high school. Freshman year, I applied to the Naval Academy. So let me say this. Freshman, right after the freshman, eighth grade, ninth grade summer, I submitted a pre-candidate application form to the Naval Academy and to West Point.
I did the same thing.
Okay. Early.
Like, early. Yeah.
Okay. So
I was way early. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the funny thing. My grandfather was on the board of directors for the American Red Cross. He was a big insurance guy, but he understood how to get stuff done. And so he was like, hey, Jake, He's like, we need to get you some letters of recommendation. He's the one that came to me and said, hey, man, Naval Academy and West Point are free, Jay. Shoot, let's sign up. So I had a 4-star admiral, how am I going to forget admiral's name? Anyway, admiral had a house at Lake Washington. My grandfather knew him from the board of directors of American Red Cross. We go to his house to swim. And so he wrote me a letter of recommendation. And then there's a 2-star general in my town that ran Madigan Hospital. Black guy, African-American guy, awesome dude, General Brown. And so he wrote me a letter of recommendation. So I send in these letter of recommendations. Now, mind you, in the 9th grade, I already had a college scholarship at the University of Washington. I was killing wrestling. I was killing football. Like you had to turn in this list. Like, I'm sure you did too, Stu. You know that it was like a list of accomplishments, like a resume, basically. Mine was like 4 pages long at that time. I had been a science kid of the year, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. I went to university. Like,
played football, wrestled in high school.
Mm-hmm. I did football, wrestled, and golf.
Nice.
So, long story short, I sent that pre-candidate questionnaire in form in, and I did West Point Naval Academy at the same time. And about the end of my freshman year, I got a letter from the Naval Academy. It was photocopied in pencil, and I can't find it, man. I got to go clean out my mom's house here, and I can't find. It's the most epic letter in the world because it literally looks like somebody drew it with a crayon. like take a
what year was this?
Huh?
What year was this?
86.
Oh, okay. When did you graduate?
90. I graduated high school in 90. I went to prep school and then I went to Naval Academy. So
okay, gotcha.
And so anyway, long story short, you know, I got this piece of paper. It was, you know, old photocopier. Sometimes they were off center.
Yeah, sure.
It was in pencil, and it said, hey, congratulations. And class of 92 had been scratched out, and the class of 94 was written in pencil. It said, congratulations, you've been accepted to the United States Naval Academy.
That's insane.
Insane, right?
So I've never seen anything like that. Yeah.
So here I am. I'm like, come on, man. Someone's playing games with me, man. So I just put it in. I had this big box of paperwork. Because I had started getting letters from colleges, and like UW was sending me a bunch of stuff on the engineering department. So I had this box of letters that I kept, like information on colleges. So I just threw it in the box, didn't think nothing of it. Started my sophomore year, played football. I wasn't a starter. I was still really little, but I weighed like 115 pounds. I was trying to wrestle 115 that year. I ended up wrestling 122. You know, my sophomore year was, so I'll come back to the letter. I just talked. So anyway, sophomore year, I get a letter from West Point saying you've been accepted, but they send me the whole package, a big, thick, like official package. So I called the Naval Academy. Hey, I got this crazy letter saying I got admitted to the Naval Academy, but I don't think it's real. So this lieutenant was like, hey, congratulations. I said, well, hold slow down a little bit. It says 94. He's like, oh, there's no way. No way you got a letter to 94. We're not done admitting a class of 92. So I'm like, all right, whatever. I didn't think so. So I'm going to hang the phone up, you know, old rotary phone. And I hear him yelling, wait. He's like, hang on, let me go check something. So he goes away, comes back like 10 minutes later. It's like, hey, man, I don't know who you know. I don't know who you are. But congratulations, you're the third person in the class of 94.
Dang.
So I'm like, let's go. We got West Point, Naval Academy, and UW. We doing good. So anyway, my wrestling, you know, I killed wrestling. Lost one regular season match the next 3 years. Nice. My sophomore year, Jeff Amick, in the last 8 seconds. Probably one of the most transformational losses that I've ever carried because literally it's driven me for my whole life. Like, I'm never going to lose again in ever. Like, and so high school was cool. I had got done with all the master science classes at my public school. So I took a full scholarship to the number 2 high school in the country, Charles Wright Academy, really rich, really uppity, 3 black people in the whole school. No one talked to me the first year, but the academics were awesome. And so I did that. Killed my junior year was solid, but I lost at states. And then my senior year, everything was good. I threw a lot of pottery during that time. Like, no one would talk to me, so I spent a lot of time in the pottery studio. I'm pretty much a master potter. Like, I can throw anything you want.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's a good skill.
My senior year, speed this up a little bit. My senior year, we went down. So you go at Christmas time in wrestling, you go wrestle other teams. And so we went to Timberline High School with Greg Ford, and it was a 2.5 hour practice. I lost 15 pounds, and I was the only guy on my team to finish. And so we talk about that hardship and adversity and knowing what's good for you. And I came back, I talked to my coach. I said, listen, man, I'm not going to win a state title if I stay here at Charles Wright. So one of the big things that I try to explain to people, if you do the same thing that you've been doing, you're going to get the same result. And if you think you're not, you're crazy. And yeah. So I knew that at an early age. And so I knew I had made 2 trips to state. I had got the regionals 2 years in a row, or my junior year was undefeated. And then I lost 2 matches at regionals. I lost 2 matches at state. And I beat the number one ranked wrestler. My sophomore year, I beat the number two ranked wrestler in AAA, the number three ranked wrestler in AA. And then I get put out the state tournament. I beat the number one ranked wrestler my junior year in my bracket. I was the 16th ranked wrestler. He was number one. I beat him the first match. And probably lost 2 matches, was out the tournament, right? And so I wasn't in world-class condition. I was good condition, but not world-class. So my senior year, scrapped it. I drove to Timberline 45 minutes each way the whole rest of wrestling season. Lost 14 pounds of practice a day. And then even with all that, I won state by 3 points over 3 matches.
Wow.
So,
man,
yeah,
that's
you know,
a little of a commitment for that achievement. Nice work.
Yeah, like I drove hard, man. I wrestled all summer. Like, it was crazy. But, like, knowing what I know now, I was the only athlete in my family, like we talked about, right? Like, I didn't have any guidance at all. I wrestled 9 months a year but didn't wrestle the 3 months leading up to wrestling, leading up to the wrestling season because I was playing football. Knowing what I know now, I should have been wrestling during football practice the whole time, right? Like, so – all those little things, but long story short, so beginning of my senior year, had this decision make: UW, Naval Academy, West Point. And I had scholarships to Oregon State for wrestling, but I didn't really want to take a scholarship for athletics because back then, if you got hurt, they pulled your scholarship.
Yep.
And so I wasn't real keen, like I just wasn't. So came down to UW Engineering, you know, West Point Naval Academy. I grew up on Fort Lewis, Army Ranger, Green Beret. I wore camouflage clothes to the school all the time. There was a good chance I was going to paint my face before I went to class, you know, come in class in full cami. And so I was just like, all right, well, sailboats got, you know, there's covers on sailboats on the cover of the Naval Academy book. 3 dudes in a gray granite hallway at West Point. Shoot, let's go drive sailboats. Like, that was the decision.
You know what's funny? Because I was in the same like decision making process, and you know what I did? I looked where all the Navy bases were, and I looked at where all the Army bases were.
Okay.
Right, because I figured I'd be living in one of those Army bases or Navy bases, and I grew up in Florida. I was like, I know what beach towns are. I love beach towns. And every Navy base, what do they have? A beach town.
They got water.
So I was like, oh, that's a no-brainer. So that was my decision.
So Navy. You made me feel a lot better today. Because I don't feel like my decision-making tree was that bad now.
No.
Right? I used to think I was out of my mind. Like, I picked sailboats over dang granite. And you telling me you picked bases on the water over lake. I'm good.
Yeah, beach towns. Beach towns over Army.
No question, right?
Yep, no question.
Awesome.
So let's change gears into the next level. What was the next level up for you when you had to, you know, when you make that level up, you got to bring a new level of game to the competition because
so
freaking hard.
Interesting. So I'm not going to say I was wise beyond my years, but I understood what I had to do to be successful at a very young age. And so my senior year of high school, I was like, man, you can't read and write. Okay. I'm telling you, man, like the English teacher at my high school was trying to get me kicked out of school, but the school was like, look, he's not coming back for another year. Cause they didn't necessarily like me because I didn't kowtow to anything they wanted me to do. Mm. I didn't care I was on scholarship. Like I'm not sweet. They wanted me to sweep floors at lunch and stuff like that. I'm like, no, nah, I don't sweep your floors. Like I'm not doing that. So the English teacher was trying to kick me out the whole year. But what it really did was say, hey man, you can't read and write. So I called a Naval Academy. I said, hey man, listen, I got to go to prep school. You know, my thought process was I'm gonna go to prep school and learn how to read and write. So they're like, no, you got directly admitted. We don't like to send guys that are directly admitted to the prep school. So I just, you know, I had no problem putting my foot down at a young age. I said, listen, man, either I go to the prep school, I'm going to West Point. They already told me I can go to prep school. Okay. So they came back and said, okay, we'll let you go to prep school. So long story short, you know, August 7th, got on a plane, went out to Newport, Rhode Island, you know, got punched in the face because I didn't realize I was joining the military, but we don't, you know, that story is a whole different deal. Talking to the ice cream man and
a guy that looks like he's selling ice cream.
Yeah, man.
Right. Summer White's.
Summer White.
Got the hat. That's where you thought you were.
Thought I was, I was getting these dudes. I was trying to take a nap and these guys kept coming in my room. And so I told them if they come in my room again, I'm going to smash their faces in. Okay. And so it was just ice cream man showed up, had a 35-minute conversation with me, told me the realities of life. I had joined the Navy. I could go home or I could step out that door and join the Navy. I sat there for 3 hours. At that point, I had no other options. It was August 7th, 1990. So I stepped outside that door, and for 3 years, I was in culture shock, did not assimilate very well, was always pissed off. But anyway, at Naps, I got the starting nose guard spot, and I started over three dudes that were all state, which was awesome. And then I lost one wrestling match. And so I made bad decisions along the way. We talked about that. The difference was me, I didn't have to study because I had taken all the math and science classes. So, you know, graduated from prep school, understood what I was getting into at the Naval Academy now, had that 6 weeks off. I prepared, tried to do really good, study all my reef points and all that stuff so I could be on point. I killed the first 2 days of plebe summer, and then it was downhill after that. Like, I couldn't remember everybody's name. I didn't know what town they were from.
Oh yeah, there's a lot to remember. I mean, there's a lot of stress going on plebe summer, even after a prep year.
Yeah, and I don't like you're not gonna push me to do something I don't want to do. And so I was playing football. I stopped wrestling. I weighed 230 at this point. So I went from 167 the year before wrestling to 230. Gained like 60 pounds. I was killing it, man. I was all in on football. Got a 3.0 my first semester at the Naval Academy.
Nice.
You know, was laughing with my wife. This is a hilarious story. So I go in the bookstore. You know this, dude. You go in the bookstore for your first book buy. And you go in there, you hand them your class list, and they start stacking those books up. Chemistry, calculus, naval leadership books, right? Like all your stuff. And they're like, oh yeah, $580 for books. So I couldn't read. So I was like, you know what? Yeah, we'll get through college without those books. Don't worry about it.
Well, you didn't have to pay for them.
Yeah, they came out your funny money.
Well, yeah, but it was like,
hang on, we're gonna talk about that. Okay.
So you had all this money saved up from not spending it on books?
My sophomore year, I got $8,000 of funny money cash in my pocket.
Wow.
Because I didn't go to uniform issues either.
Dang.
Like I didn't do like, so I didn't buy books in 4 years of Naval Cat. And if it was a book I really needed, I'd rent it. Right.
Okay. Got it.
And I will tell you this story. This story is a good story. So anyway, long story short, wrestled, played football my freshman year, did great. Sophomore year, killed football, JV, had a really bad coach, wouldn't play me. So the end of my junior year, I quit and went and wrestled and took some lumps. But wrestled the whole year on varsity and then came back out my senior year and played football. My college career athletically sucked. because I should have wrestled, but then my grades would have been bad. Like, maybe should have just focused on academics. I want to be an aerospace engineer, but I did computer science. Okay. So I'm going to tell you this story because this is a huge, like, pivotal point in my life. So my sophomore year, did you have, I think her name is, it was like Miss Orlowski, the first female special operations diver in the Navy.
I don't remember her. Yeah. Okay, I graduated in 91. So
this is 93.
Yeah.
I thought she had been there for a while, but she was the Naval Leadership Teacher. She wore these Laura Ingalls dresses. She was an All-American swimmer from Florida.
And I don't remember her. No.
I'm in her Naval Leadership class. I'm in there with Grover Favors, one of the running backs, my dude from Atlanta. And she puts an overhead up. So I start reading. I'm like, damn, this overhead been up here a long time. So I'm reading. And I'm like, damn, I finished the overhead. So I hit Grover. I was like, Grover, I finished the overhead. That's the first time ever. And he was like, good job, Jake. Like, I knew Grover. He was my tight man, right? Like, you know, you have one guy. And he knew I couldn't read. So he was like, dude, that's good job. Punch me in the arm. So the whole rest of class, I'm like, yeah. So at the class, she's like, hey, Ms. Shimmons Wynn, come here. So I go up there, and she's tough now. So I need to see you in my office tomorrow, third period. And I had been in a lot of trouble with the Naval Academy. Like, I graduated with 370 demerits. Yeah, I had some struggles, man. Mainly because I wasn't listening to them little kids screaming at me. I was like, man, look, like, get out of my face. I'm not hearing this. Like, I had a rough plebe year. So long story short, I talked to my roommate. We tried to do strategy session. What'd you do? I don't know. So we roll in her office, and her office looked exactly like your office. Okay. It was dark. It was a light. She had a light on the desk, like an interrogation zone. Like, I sat in a chair. The light was shining on me. And so I sat down. Ms. Shimmons Wig, I'm going to cut right to the chase. You can't read. You don't know how to read and write. So I had this whole spiel because I had been confronted before. What are you talking about? How'd I get in the Naval Academy if I can't read and write? No way I can read and write. She just sat back in her chair and was like, stop. So I was like, oh no. She's like, look, you've been here for three semesters. I have sat down and met with every one of your teachers at the Naval Academy. I called all six of your teachers at prep school. They all said the same thing. You sit in the front row, you take a ton of notes, you never turn in your homework, and you always get mid B's on tests. Sometimes you get low A's or high C's. So at this point, I start crying. I'm God. Like, she goes, how'd you get here? So I told her the story, right? And I'm crying. She said, listen, she's like, you got to learn how to read and write. Can't go in the Navy as an officer not knowing how to read and write. She's like, there's this Christmas class. Learn how to read. And if you take it, I'll give you a B in my class. I had a C in her class at that point. And I said, ma'am, I'll do anything you want me to do. So I went to Christmas class, learned how to read. A couple of my best friends from the Naval Academy were in the class. And they still, like, every now and then they'd be like, yo, I was in there. You couldn't read a sentence, Jake. And so, you know, 8 hours a day for a month straight, man, learned how to read.
Damn.
Man, learned how to speed read. Read my first book, Rogue Warrior by Dick Marchenko.
There you go.
Yeah, man. And so my roommate to this day calls me Red. Because I read a book. So, you know, transformational though, you know, yeah. Mistake. I probably should learn how to read a lot earlier than that, but, you know, I'll get an A's in calculus and chemistry, and I carry that D in English.
Mm.
So.
Gotcha. So when in the Naval Academy were you like, all right, this Navy SEAL thing seems pretty cool. I'm going to go down this pipeline.
All right, so this is crazy. So I watched Top Gun for 3 years straight.
Same. That's why I went to Naval Academy.
We're going to fly F-14s. I'm going to be Maverick. Like, you can't. The second day at NAPS, Jim Galladay won a Bronze Star for Actions in Panama.
Oh, I know him very well.
Yeah, good dude, man. Great dude. Quiet. Yeah,
his kids and my kids go to the same school.
Okay.
Growing up.
So yeah. Lawyer now, killing it. And he was a non-presumptuous, just kind of a skinny, I said, damn. So he wins his thing. I said, what's a Navy SEAL? They're like, yo, those are crazy people. Go behind enemy lines, shoot people with guns. I said, shoot. And I want to be Army Ranger Green Beret. Like, I had Mr. T haircut for 3 years. Like, I was trying to be in the A-team, man. And, you know, no, like I said, if I end up Naval Academy based on boats, I surely didn't know what an A-team or a Green Beret was. So when they told me this, I was like, oh, flying was cool. We're going to go do this. So literally the second day of a Naval Academy, I knew what I was going to go do.
Okay, gotcha.
And then I finished second in the screener. I was the first qualified African-American in like 6 years, Commander Rutherford.
Oh, yeah. Class of 90.
89, yeah, 89. Yep. So yep. He was the last one. I was 95. You know, there were some dudes on my board. I probably didn't interview that well. And then I had 370 demerits at that time. And so they were just like, look, we're not taking you. And so I tell people this story. I didn't eat for 3 weeks. I lost like 35 pounds. Like I've been mad in life. And then I was there. And so I just, you know, you lose sometimes and you get punched in the face. And I realized that my conduct and my behavior cost me a shot to go to SEAL training. And so for 3 weeks, I just strategized in my room. My roommate said, like, he said, I didn't talk for 3 weeks straight. I just sat there and stewed and thought, how can I get to SEALs? Long story short, I came out of there. I said, look, I'm going to pick the worst ship in the Navy. I went SWO, picked the worst ship in the Navy, Merrimack. And then I laid down this fire plan to get the SEALs, man. I had to imitate the training officer at the Naval Academy so that I could get, wave my basket leave and go to SWAS the day after graduation. Did that, went to SWAS. I trained all day, every day for the PST, crushed the PST, did a minute better on both the run and the swim. I did a minute and a half better on the swim and a minute better on the run from my Naval Academy time.
Nice.
Went to the Merrimack as a midshipman to make sure they gave me deck division so I didn't have no follow-on schools. Graduated SWAS, number two in my class because I was studying so hard because I knew everything I needed at SWAS. I need to get my SWOP in. You know, reported. Now this is kind of crazy. Reported to my ship in early October, and I didn't tell this story, but my freshman year, my company officer was a female, Bobby Spillane. And I told her, this is what I said to her. She was a lieutenant commander at the time. Hey, listen, chick, you can try to kick me out, but I'm traveling on the football team. I got a 3.0, and I'm an African-American. You ain't got enough power to kick me out. Oof. Why don't you stop playing around, stop writing me up for all this stuff, and let me get on with my life, okay? That's my company officer. A little bit out of my mind as a freshman. I report to the ship. She's the CO.
Oof.
I'm
That's
like,
not good.
To her credit, for 2 years she wouldn't tell anybody that she knew me. Lied right to their face. I don't remember. Okay, but I tell everybody I was on a mission, man. I was on a vision quest. You know, vision quest shot in Spokane, Washington. I knew what a vision quest was.
Yeah.
So I got to my ship. 36 hours. I got my OOD in port. Had my board. Got OOD in port in 36 hours. Right. Stood watch the first day, 18 hours the first day, stood the rest of it, took my board. Second day I was on the ship. End of the second day, I took my OD and port board. Cats was like, oh my God. I was on the worst ship in the Navy. Everybody had been fired. So like I just attacked it. Got everything signed off. So I got there in October, February 21st, I was signed off. Everything for SWO.
Dang, that's fast.
Yo, I was steaming Willie Beeman. I tell everybody I worked 20 hours a day, all day Saturday. I went to work Sunday at noon. Like I was on a mission, man, vision quest.
Now tell me this. What kind of ship was the Merrimack?
AO-179, so a fleet oiler.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Picked it specifically because it had no weapon systems. Like it had a Sea Whiz, but that got ripped off on my first underway with a big wave. The biggest thing we had was a couple 50 cals. So you didn't have no weapon systems to learn. You didn't have to do a missile X. You didn't have any of the qualifications that you'd have to do on a normal ship.
Huh.
So long story short, I had a backyard deal with Margaret, the community manager. You know Margaret.
Oh, of course.
So when I didn't get SEALs, my sponsor, Jimmy Rowan, was working in the same office with Margaret. I don't know what he was in Marine Corps doing something, but he knew Margaret. So I went up to Pentagon. I sat down with her and she was like, look, Jake, you got screwed at the board. I said, yeah. She said, as soon as I see your package on my desk for lateral transfer, I'm picking you up. And I was like, even if it's the first year, as soon as it hits my desk, I'm picking you up.
Nice.
I said, thank you.
If you had Margaret in your pocket, man, that was powerful.
No, she's awesome, man. Yeah. I'll tell you my biggest regret a little bit later, but she's in that one too. So long story short, I got my SWO pin middle of May. And I was I beat 3 JGs on my ship to SWO.
Dang.
A couple months later, she made me CDO. And so I had my division officer, the officer that runs all the divisions.
Like operations officer?
Yeah. Right. So I had the first lieutenant, who was my boss, and I had the supply officer. Both were under instruction under me.
Dang.
The captain didn't trust either one of them. They both been fired a couple times. She didn't trust them. So I'm a CDO. So killed it. Turned my package in. Got picked up. You know, had to thank Margaret. So anyway, I spent another couple years on another year on a ship. Went and wrestled for the All-Navy wrestling team.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, did some stuff. I wish I had went to Bud's right after that because I was in the best shape of my life. You know, and then.
So how was Bud's for you? How was that as a were you still an ensign when you went to Bud's?
JG.
JG. So were you at all like in the class leader?
Yeah. Zone? So yep. I was no. I was an ensign when I got there.
Okay.
I was a JG. October 97. I had just put on JG.
Gotcha.
So there was 5 officers ahead of me. I tell the story. I showed up to Bud's. I was completely out of shape. October 97, hadn't ran or swam in probably 3 months.
Mm.
And Bud's, the class before that summer, there had been a class with 90 guys graduated. So I was like, oh, this is getting easy. I'm going to go out of shape, make it as hard as possible. That literally was my logic. Okay. Not a good plan. So showed up at Bud's, you know, there was 5 officers in front of me. 3 weeks later, I was a class OIC, you know.
During Hell Week.
No, this is, I'm talking about a ramp up.
Oh, a ramp up. Okay. Like, okay.
Yeah. The couple of the months before you actually start Bud's.
Yeah. Pre-Bud stuff.
Yeah. Tom gotcha. Story. You know the name Tom Story?
Yeah.
He was in my class and his shoulders kept coming out on the O course. One of the toughest guys I know. And then there was another lieutenant. There was 3 lieutenants. And then there was a JG in front of me in 94 grad.
I gotcha.
And he lasted 8 seconds.
Mm.
So like I got put in charge and then the rest was history. We broke the instructors in first phase. It was like 5 football players, 3 football players in my class. And like,
oh, that's fun.
Yeah. We broke the instructors in first phase. They wouldn't beat us. We would tell them, hey man, let's stay out here and work out all day, man. We just get strong for tomorrow. Talk crap to them. And then, you know, eventually they were just like, yo, don't mess with them. They just, so Bud's was good, man. Eye-opening experience for me. You know, I got a great video about my experience through Bud's, you know, pretty tumultuous. I was the first African-American to graduate in 8 years, 9 years from training. So 5th black officer to graduate from SEAL training.
Dang.
Which was cool. Yeah, it was cool. I tell everybody my 3 years in the SEAL teams was rough. And it was really because I didn't have any mentorship. I didn't have anybody helping me or guiding me and, you know, made some super sound mistakes as far as relationships go, you know. So went to SEAL Team 8 on the East Coast. First 2.5 years as number 2 officer at SEAL Team 8, killing it. I got a really crappy OIC who was a Naval Academy grad, 95 guy, who was just a complete turd burglar. And been fired 3 times at SDV. And then they sent him out to the East Coast to rehab his career and just completely incompetent. You know, I grew up in the woods. I tried to charge me with lying one time and got us lost on a 2.5 hour run at Pickett, Fort Pickett. I'd been at Pickett 2 years at that point because I volunteered to be the safety officer for workups and stuff. And like I knew exactly where we were, got in a fight with him. Well, it wasn't really a fight. I threw him on the ground and told him I would kill him if he ever put his hands on me again. And, you know, just really bad relationship skills as the number two guy in the platoon. So went on deployment and I told the command, like I was that only African-American officer on the East Coast for 3 years. So I experienced some things that no one should have experienced. Mm. But I didn't handle them the right way. I internalized it all. I got really angry. You know, I beat up a lot of dudes, man. A lot of dudes took L's because I'm short and they think they can get me. And so, you know, and then what I really did was just, you know how the SEAL teams are. They find something that gets under your skin, and then guys gonna start digging at it with a shovel.
Yeah, you get a little bit of that. That's
for sure. You know, and I'm from Washington State. You're not gonna dig under the skin, under my skin about the color of it, right? Like, you're not gonna dig in me about the color of my skin. Like, I'm not having that. And so I realize now all they were really doing was picking at the scab. They weren't really picking on me because I was black. They were just picking at the scab because they knew that it irritated me.
Yeah. And I mean, we used to say this one thing, you can't snap me, right? We'd always just say, can't snap me, can't snap me. Like when somebody's messing with you,
you just say,
can't snap me, can't snap me. Yeah. Keep talking, can't snap me. And it was like a whole platoon little thing, can't snap me.
Yeah, I wish I had that, right? Yeah. I've been helping the minorities for the last 15 years. And so now the response is, hey man, glad to know who the bigots are, right? Just simple. Clean, glad to know who the bigots are, keep it moving. But like for me, you call me the N-word,
yeah,
hey man, let's go outside, bud.
Yeah, it's game time,
right? And like I told you, I can fight. So, you know, I trashed some people bad. And then all that really did was, you know,
didn't help you.
No, because guys wanted to test you then. Yeah. They wanted their shot in the ring. And so, like to me, it was separate incidences, but now knowing what I know, really came back to, I didn't have no mentorship, right? I didn't have a guy like you pulling me by the ear and saying, hey man, listen, they doing this stuff because it's getting to you. They not doing it because black, you know, they doing it because it's bothering you and they just picking at you.
Yeah.
So long story short, went on deployment. I told the command if I got fired on deployment that I was going to burn down the house and Keith Bernie managed to get me fired on deployment. And I was so livid. They sent me to group four in Rota. And they were like, hey, man, we're going to stay, keep you here for the deployment. But like, I didn't have a job. I wasn't doing nothing. I should have been more proactive and volunteering for work, you know, went somewhere, got some work in. But I was just really sitting in my, and going to PT in the morning and then going back to the officer's housing and just sleeping all day. You know, I wasn't depressed as much as I was like ultra angry.
Yeah, I get you.
So I got accepted to Michigan for business school. I didn't intend to get out. Like I was doing 20 years. And then one day I walked in, the CEO of group was a dev group guy. He was just like, Jake, you're not happy, man. What's wrong? I said, listen, man, you fired me. And you chose me over this inept officer who's going to get everybody killed. And he was like, look, you don't have that right to make that statement. I said, listen, sir. I said, I ain't been in a combat situation yet. I said, but I got shot in high school and I've been in 15 gunfights. I said, I know what a guy looks like. I know when a guy's going to be able to perform or not. That dude ain't going to be able to perform. So he was just like, look, we're going to send you back to SEAL Team 8, fly you home next week. So I was like, cool. So when I stepped on board the quarterdeck, I told him, I said, look, I told you, if I showed up early, I'm burning the house down. And this was really bad on my part. Like I didn't understand what I was doing. I was just really mad. So I filed 187 page grievance and all 57 things that had happened to me were in there. And so I really blew the lid off of a bunch of people and it didn't do anything to change the situation. You know, over the next 10 years, there was two minority officers came in. Birch and Jay Jones had come in 99, 2000, and didn't do anything to help the problem, right? Didn't help the relationships, didn't do anything. But it just came back to, I didn't handle mentorship. You know, if I could do it all over again, I would have kept my mouth shut, went to work at SEAL Team 8, lived on my reputation, right? Kicked ass every day like I had been doing for the previous 3 years. Because here's what happened. They sent another officer out there, and he was like the golden boy of the command. And Keith Birney did the same thing to him, right? Like tried to run him out the team, tried to blame all of Keith's failures on him. Mm. And so when he came back, they pulled his bird. They pulled Keith's bird and put him out the Navy. And everybody called me and was like, dude, if you hadn't filed a grievance, we would have been able to take care of you. And at that point, I was out when the platoon got back. So I got out in May. They got back in June of 01. And I talked to my chief, had a great conversation with my chief, you know, and just, yeah, that's what happens when you don't have no high level mentorship, man. You don't have nobody helping you.
Yeah, that's a little tough.
Because I got it with my guys now. If you get in your own head, only bad things can happen. And the only way you can get out of your own head is for somebody to slap you across the face and say, hey, man, you're not looking at this the right way. You know, you're not.
So how are you taking these experiences from your mm-hmm. past and moving into this next phase of your life?
So I get out the SEAL teams. I go back to Washington for 3 months, report to business school, killing business school. I'm there with one of my buddies from the Naval Academy. So we got a house, like we're enjoying life. We try to put a hot tub in the front room. We got a slurping machine. And then 9/11 happens. And I got up in front of the class, like we were watching it happen. And everybody was, you know, kind of pontificating about how it happened, what happened. And they asked me to tell them what happened. And I told them, I said, listen, between 5 and 20 terrorists yoked a dude up in first class, cut his head off with a
box cutter,
X-Acto knife or whatever they're called.
Box cutter.
Razor knives.
Yeah.
I said, they cut his head off. Everybody on the plane sat back down. They took over the cockpit. One of them knew how to fly the plane and they flew it in the World Trade Center. And everybody was like, oh, okay. It's hard to believe. I said, listen, man, that's a tier one special operations mission. I'm telling you how they did it. So it came out a couple of weeks later. I was 100% correct exactly what happened. But I tell the story back to Margaret that morning. So 9/11 happened, 9/11, 12 at like 6 o'clock in the morning, my phone rang. It was Margaret. She said, hey, Jake. I said, yeah, Margaret. She said, you knew I was calling. I said, well, I was thinking. She said, hey, you're going to go back and be the platoon commander of your platoon. You're going to be in Afghanistan in 9 days. She said, we need you to go to war. And so it was interesting. I said, how long do I have to think about it? She said, 24 hours. She said, I need you in Norfolk tomorrow at noon. You got 8 days. And then we on a C-5 going to Afghanistan. And so I was kind of like, man. And I had talked to the CIA at that point. The day before when 9/11 happened, I wrote the CIA an email on their like website. And so I wasn't against the idea. But then me and my roommate sat down, man, and one of the toughest decisions I've ever made in my life, my biggest regret, you know, I sat down with my roommate. I was still, my anger level was probably still 1 million on a 1 to 10 scale. And I just felt like it was going to be a bad outcome if I went and did this. I couldn't control my anger as far as like that whole process of just getting what happened to me for 9.5 months out of my system. I wasn't ready yet. So I called Margaret back, the morning, 13th, about 6 a.m. Say, Margaret, I can't do it. And she was like, okay, I'm on to the next one. Right. Like the train ain't stopping because she ain't gonna sit there and try to sell you if you say you can't do it.
Right.
And my biggest regret is like now, like I should have jumped on that train, you know, 1,000,000%. Now I will say this. I got an awesome wife. I got 3 awesome kids. The chance that I have the life that I have now is relatively close to 0 if I stayed in the SEALs. And so as much as that's my biggest regret, I also understand like the next semester I met my wife. A lot of stuff has happened since then. But like my biggest pain in my heart is that I don't have any combat. Right. Like that's the biggest like hole in my heart. But yeah, I didn't go back, man. So got out of business school, went to DC, took a governmental consulting job, You know, hated it, hated every day of it. My guy was the basketball coach of Naval Academy. I went and talked to him about trying to get a coaching job, tried to volunteer the first year, didn't realize just how difficult it is to volunteer in football. So I went and talked to my dude, and I was just like, hey, man. He was like, look, you know how to do this. You gotta figure out a way to get in. It's really hard. Everybody wants to coach football.
Yeah.
So I joined the booster club at Maryland, and that allows you to go to practice. And I went to every practice for a year. Every practice a year, 2003, the end of 2003 through 2004, I stood on the sidelines for every practice. So I'd go to work at 4 a.m. I'd get off. We had 9-hour, 10-hour days. I'd get off about 2, get on the train. I'd be at practice at 3:30 every day.
Wow.
So I got to know the whole staff at Maryland. Got a job. So beginning of 2005, January, they had a GA job came open. I was making about $200 a year. And I jumped at the opportunity to make $7,000 a year and go be a GA at Maryland. You know, so first 2 weeks, crazy things happened. Okay. We'll talk about this. I drive my life on goals, right? Like I drive it. 6 years ago, I made a quantum shift. There's a book out there called Overachievement by John Elliott. It's a transformational book that says drive your life by goals, but always take the best opportunity. Always. And we're gonna come at the end, we'll talk about how it drove my life. But like, so second week I'm at Maryland, Phil Emery comes in.
Oh yeah.
Phil Emery, former strength
Navy.
At Navy.
Yeah, Navy, yep.
He's the head of college scouting for
Detroit.
Atlanta.
Or Atlanta at the time. Yeah.
And he says, hey Jake, man, you want to be a scout? I'm like, okay, let me figure this out. Should have took that opportunity like that. I've been coaching for 2 weeks and I got an opportunity to go to the NFL, even as a scout. Like that, I should have took it. Should have took it. Okay. Yeah. So don't take it. I talk to everybody like, Jake, you go into scouting, you can't coach. Don't do it. Right. We talk about all these mistakes we made. Not literally a day later, Marty Fine shows up, who's my prep school head coach at Naval Academy Prep, tries to give me a D-line job at Bryant. That one was not so clear cut, right? I didn't take it. Stayed as a GA. A week later, my dude John Cho, classmate of mine and Buds, awesome water polo player from the Naval Academy, calls me. He's like, hey, Jake, I got a job for you. I'm like, look, John, I just got this coaching job 3 weeks ago. It's awesome. I'm like, I'm not looking for a job. He said, you're going to want to listen to this job. I said, all right, what is it? He said, Oprah's going to pay you $2,700 a day to move to South Africa and fix her school. So that's when her school went high order. They were beating all the girls in her school in South Africa. She was looking for a special forces person with an education background. Huh. And I had did some work for Detroit Public Schools when I was in business school. So John was like, look, she saw your resume. You're in, brother. Like, I got her a personal security contract. He was doing a lot of PSD stuff. And he had her and Wynn. And so he's like, you're in, dude. Tell me you want it. And this goes back to like not understanding mentorship. And I didn't talk to anybody about that. I didn't talk to my future wife. I sat at my house, 24-hour decision. And I just said, man, like they trying to take me off my goals. And so I turned down $2,700 a day. Mm. And if you look, but you're like, what are you doing? Like, you go work for Oprah for 3 years. She calls any NFL team. You coaching in the NFL. Like, just bad decision making, you know, poor thought process. And so, you know, I stayed coaching, coached at Maryland for 2 seasons, went to Catholic, another bad decision, took a Division III job, grinding my way out of Division III, got to Iona. They canceled football. But I was in the FCS now, got to go to New Hampshire for 2 years, went to New Hampshire for 2 years, and then I got a job down in Texas. So I went to Texas for 2 years,
man.
got fired in Texas. It was awesome. You're going to get fired in coaching. I got fired in Texas, was out of coaching 14, shot the TV show, Dude, You're Screwed. It was a cool experience, really helped with recruiting and football.
Yeah.
And then I got back into coaching, but like in coaching, if you're out for more than 2 years, you're out. You're not getting back in. So I had to take a D2 job, which actually turned out to be one of the best jobs I've had, but I wasn't making no money. I'm making $25,000 a year. And so we moved to Findlay, Ohio, coaching for my dude, Rob Keys, who's awesome. Got to meet Corey, he had best coaching staff I've been on was at New Hampshire, or I mean at Findlay. And so I'm sitting there making $25,000, trying to pay bills. I got two kids, had my third kid there. Mm. And things started getting tight. And my wife just told me, she's like, look, man, it's time to get out of coaching. Like, we living too tough. And it's like, we fighting to pay bills now. She got a great job. And we were still fighting to pay bills. So 2017, she's like, we had a conversation midsummer. She's like, at the end of the season, if you don't get a better job paying more money, we out. And so, you know, the football gods were looking down on me. Two weeks before football started, my boy called me over in Illinois. Hey, I got a job for you. I took it. Turned out to be, you know, 4 years of awesomeness over here. Didn't win a lot of games, but I got in the Big Ten. Everything was gravy. It was super cool. And then, you know, we moved out of like kind of a really poor living situation. We bought a nice house over here. Kids, you know, everybody's killing it. And then 2 years ago, I thought we were going to get fired. So stopped spending my money. But really what happened was I realized that like the time in this business is kind of run out. I'm 49. I've had a couple guys. Mike Prefer is one of my superstar mentors now. And he Naval Academy dude,
yeah,
89 grad.
Cleveland Browns.
He's just like, look, Jake, you're 49 now. You're not a young dude. Like, it's hard to get places. You haven't been on the field in 4 years. So first 2 years I was doing special teams. And then the last 2 years I was the director of player development, man development. And yeah. So he was like, it's going to be really hard for you to get a job. And so I don't know if you've heard about the Amazon DSPs through any of your classmates or anything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I got two dudes doing that, and they're making incredible money, incredible. And so May of last year, applied for a DSP, completed the application in August because it's really long, and I don't like doing paperwork. And long story short, interviewed throughout the season this fall, and then on Friday – they gave me the call. So, hey man, they call it inclined at Amazon. So I got inclined. I'm on the bench in San Antonio. We're going to move back to San Antonio.
Nice.
And, you know, mid this year probably is what they're telling me. I'm doing a bunch of stuff with my guys that got the Amazon routes, learning how this process works. But it comes back to, you know, if I hadn't read the John Elliott book Overachievement, there's no way I would have made this jump out to go work for Amazon.
Yeah, that's a complete shift. You know, you took it. Opportunity changes your path a little bit. Now you're also still doing some mentorship with you know, young folks that want to serve. You know,
yeah,
what's all that about?
So basically 2003, I started Omega Psi Phi at the Naval Academy. Okay. Oh. Me and a bunch of guys, we brought the Black fraternity to the Naval Academy. And we got rock stars. Like, we got a Black submarine captain. We got, you know, captains of airliners. We killing it. Okay. So I made it my mission.
New brigade commander.
Huh?
The new brigade commander this year.
Yeah. She's a Black female. She's not one of ours.
Yeah.
I don't know if we work with it. We got a huge mentorship program at the Naval Academy now.
Yeah. Her dad's one of my classmates.
Yeah. I talked to her dad because I wanted to get some background on just kind of what transpired.
Nice.
So anyway, we built this mentorship network at the Naval Academy because I don't want any I don't want any minorities. And really, I say minorities, but I got a whole bunch of Caucasian dudes I done put in the Naval Academy. Like, I got a senior there now. Like, Mike Prefer's kid, Wilson Prefer's at the Naval Academy graduating this year. You know, so a lot of people say, oh, you only work with minorities. No, I only work with really good people. You're really good, I'm going to help. Okay. But I'm really trying to prevent the minorities from having my experiences. Like, if I had some mentorship, I'd still be in the Navy. I would. Like, I love the Navy SEAL lifestyle. I grew up in the lifestyle. Like, everything about, go to work, work out, shoot guns, you know, parachute, go down range, fight, come home, recharge, do it again. I love that. Everything about it, I love. But I didn't have anybody to help me in the process. So, like, now, all of my guys, we raise them. 5-year mentor, 10-year mentor, 20-year mentor.
Nice.
They know that. And so, like, I don't want anybody to have my experiences. But now, like, in the last probably 2 years, I've really taken a turn on just the whole mentorship process in general. From, like, I got this online class, you know, becoming a Navy SEAL. The whole purpose of it is just to be able to magnify myself to more people so that I don't have to have one-on-one relationships for you to be successful at SEAL training or Green Berets or Army Ranger. Like, I got two guys just graduated from Army Ranger School. I tell everybody, nice. like it's my mission to ensure that everybody that is worthy is successful when they get in the military. You know, I got three dudes in flight school right now. I got two dudes at West Point right now.
Nice.
I got Wilson at the Naval Academy. I got 7 dudes going to the Naval Academy this year. You know, we got this Navy SEAL stuff. Like, now that it's out there on the internet, like, I got a spreadsheet right now with 1,400 dudes that want to be Navy SEALs. 450 minorities.
Nice.
And I'm talking about real minorities. I got a dude the other day, my guy up in Detroit, I'm not going to say his name, fluent in Arabic, Lebanese, first generation, wants to be Army Ranger.
Nice.
You know, so like demographics that we're not used to seeing in the teams, and all these guys are going to be successful because I got my hands on
them. Yeah, that's, you know, awesome.
So we're doing that. We had a ton of success over the last 10 years. You know, the last 7 African-American SEAL officers are my guys. They're killing it in the teams right now. You know, we got 2 troop commanders right now. In one of the troop commanders' job, there's a platoon commander. So, like, 4 dudes at SEAL. There's 4 African-American officers at SEAL Team 1. 3 of them are my guys.
Nice.
You can't get no better than that, Stu.
And no, that's good.
The best thing about it all, man, like, they're not having the experiences I had.
That's progress.
You know, like they having the experiences, but they not letting them pick the scab. Like you're saying, right? Like your whole platoon had that saying, you can't get me.
Yeah.
Well, now they playing that game and like they all killing. None of them getting out. We ain't had nobody get out yet.
Nice.
Nobody is disgruntled. They love it. And like, I feel like at the end of the day, I've done my job. If they can have a successful run in the Navy and get what they really want out of it.
Well, I will say this. I think there has been a shift in the overall mentality of what a SEAL is, or any special operator these days, is that looking like me, I am limited to where I can go in the world, and people not fully understand, you know, I'm obviously an American coming into their country.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't look like me, you know, you have a unique set of skills that, you know, combined with great training and great mentorship, you can really be an asset the way, you know, someone like me can't.
Yeah.
You know,
I believe that. But you know what I'm going to say? Unless you got a whole minority SEAL platoon, which we know don't exist.
Yeah.
You know, you got onesies and twosies, which I'm going to change that. You know, I'm going to tell you, the SEAL community don't necessarily like me. That's good, because they can't stop me. You know, now I got 450 people on my list, and I'm going to help them diversify. And there's really nothing they can do, because my guys are going to Buds, and they're so prepared physically and mentally and emotionally, and they have support, like, they're going to be successful. And I'm not saying that they don't want them. I'm just saying, like, I have so many right now that it's crazy. Like, I'm gonna tell you who's gonna benefit the most is the Army, because I got a lot of guys that, you know, the officer pipeline to get into SEALs, you know this, it's 18 to 24 months.
Oh, it's and long. It's tight too. And it's like 60 a year. I mean,
yeah, it's 60, yeah, like 60, 65. 70 a year.
Yeah.
But in the Naval Academy is getting 45 of those right now.
Yeah.
So ROTC is getting 15 roughly, and then the general population is getting 5. And so you got, you know this, you know, Stu, you got the Olympic swimmer, Olympic runner to go. You know, even for the listed side, it's hard to get there. They're at 150% manning right now, or applications.
Yeah. So, standards are high. Standard, which they should be.
Yeah, standards are always high, but like to me now, they're astronomical. So you give me a guy with a college degree, and I can get you to swim well enough, but I might not be able to get you comfortable in the water well enough.
Yeah.
But like I can be in the Army in 3 months as an Army officer. And I get to go to, as an officer, I volunteer to go to Ranger school and infantry officer school. There's a huge shortage of infantry officers in the Army. Yep. I can be in a Ranger bat in 3 years. Like my guy, one of my junior officers, Jim, was in the same Ranger class as my other dude. It's crazy. Like they were separated a little bit, but Jim got rolled out of a Ranger class and then had to go back, was in class with one of my linebackers from Finley.
That's fun.
And, you know, he's got 5 or 6 more months in his infantry unit before he can put his package in to go to RASP. But now he's going to go be a combat PA for the Green Berets. And so he's going to go to selection. He'll kill it. And then he'll go to PA school and be a PA in the A teams. And
nice.
You know, so just good, man.
It's
just,
that's awesome, man. That's good. Yeah. You know, and you're bringing, you're taking some experiences you had and just making it better. And that's all we can do. You know, that's all you can do as a mentor is just leave it better than you found it.
Yeah. And here's the best part of it. Now it's growing itself, Stu. Like one of my junior officers called me, let's say 3 years ago now. Jake, man, I'm struggling in this mission plan and stuff. Like I said, okay, listen, I'm not the guy. Right. I've been out the teams for 20 years. I'm not going to help you on something that I'm not up to speed at.
Yeah. Me, so same here.
Pick the phone up, call two of the guys on the tree. Hey, man, dude having troubles. Get it fixed. We got it, Jay. So they tag teamed him. He went to one guy's house on Saturday for 8 hours. Did mission planning's con ops brief. Sunday, same thing for a whole month.
Nice.
Boom, show back up, you know, crushed his next one, went down range and had an amazing deployment. Like an amazing deployment.
That's so excellent.
Like, yeah, like that's where the rubber meets the road when you can help people with a deficiency and get them up to speed. So now that deficiency, now they're an asset. Because now they don't have that bad experience where they get fired as a AOIC. Or someone says they're inadequate and they, you know, they get their bird pulled. And like, all we're doing is growing talent, man. We're just growing talent. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. Like magnifying my ability to mentor to every one of my guys growing up, coming up in the teams right now, coming up in aviation. Like I said, Naval Academy mentorship program, the MIDI mentor program, like Naval Academy is talking about giving them resources so that they can go across the whole Naval Academy with it, because we done changed the graduation rate of African Americans there. Used to be 50%. Now that mug up to like 75. And if you ask me, it's because we put a program, a process in place in 03 to teach them how to study, teach them time management, teach them how to control, like going to DC all the time, like teaching them how to stay out of trouble, giving them high standards, right? Like something that I would have been like, oh my God, I can't get fried for something stupid again, because I got all this bigger calling. Like I got all these young dudes that are looking to me to make good decisions to lead them. You know, it really makes it a community so that you're not trying to be that guy that messes up in the community.
I love it. I'm loving it. Man. So last question, what's next for Jake Zwig?
Yeah, we're going to go down. We're going to run this Amazon route and
so you're building a new company right now.
Building a new company. We'll go down to San Antonio sometime mid, 2021. Last time I was in San Antonio, they were trying to get me to run for Congress. So, you know, we'll see what happens, man. I just know this. My life is not as regimented anymore because, like, I'm operating on overachievement book now. And it's basically take the best opportunity, just crush it, and then see what comes next, you know? And it doesn't look like I'm gonna be a Division I head coach. I had some interviews for Division I AD jobs. I didn't get them. But, you know, you go run a $10 million company and all of a sudden now you still got all my athletic connections. Maybe someone calls me and says, hey, man, we will give you a mid-major AD job at a school without football. I don't know where I'll be. I may not take it. Go run for Congress. I don't really know, Stu. I know this. Like, I'm going to make a huge transition from raising other people's kids in football to raising my three boys.
That's good.
We're gonna make this transition from electronics and video games to making fires, riding motorcycles, you know, learning how to land nav and do, you know, I bought them all BB guns this year for Christmas because none of them know how to shoot right now. You know,
We started my son with BB guns and
You know, we'll do that. And, you know, I'm going to focus on my family and my kids are already awesome. Like they doing really good. Not to toot my wife's horn. Like my wife is killing it. Right. Like I've been raising other people's kids for the first 9 years of my kids' lives.
Yeah.
And I try to raise my kids. It's not quite as bad as in the SEAL teams, but it's still not good. So yeah. I'm going to give them, they're going to get a lot of time. And we'll move down to San Antonio, enjoy Texas. I love Texas, love San Antonio. And we're going to lay tracks, man.
That's good, man.
Some other really big stuff going on, like massive. I talked to you before the podcast on that one. Your phone going to blow up and I'm going to call you and say, I need some help. So
all right.
If we get the craziness, you know, I'm going to revolutionize this country.
Well, one thing for sure, Jake, is the grass does not grow very long under your feet. So
you
always are moving. So let that be a lesson to you. Anybody listening out here is you got to take those opportunities when they come across, but you got to have some high goals along that journey.
Yep.
You may be pulled left or right from that every now and then, but usually it always brings you back to that initial goal if you really stay focused.
And like, I'll give you an example. So I was wavering on whether or not to take the Amazon deal, right? I was kind of like, a lot of paperwork. I love paperwork. I've learned reading, and writing cards. I love paperwork. So I came home one day and I told my wife, I was like, hey, you know, I'm not 100% sold on this Amazon deal. She's like, no, we're taking the Amazon deal. And I said, well, there's a lot of paperwork. She said, no, I already made a spreadsheet.
Nice. There you go.
She said, you're taking this job. Done. Right. Like,
well, yeah, that's good support, man. You got to have family support no matter what you do. So if
it's going to be crazy, man. And, you know, I told you, I think at the masterclass, I just got half of first phase in. So I got to jam up about 25 videos of first phase. I'm going to give the world that ability to have me as a mentor all the way through SEAL training, you know, for everything that it's crazy. You know, you build something, Stu, it's taken me about 2 years to build and I was in coaching. I was kind of not super serious about it. And then COVID hit and I had some more time. But now I'm like, God, like every video has immense value. It's long. When I mentor somebody, they're not failing. Like, I won't let them fail unless they want to change directions. Jake, I had a guy, I trained him for 6 months. He was an offensive lineman, lost 75. No, he went from 320 to 210.
Nice.
And was running sub-9, swimming sub-9s, and called me and said, I feel really bad. I said, listen, man, don't feel bad. What's going on? He said, I got accepted to the fire academy. I'm going to go be a fireman.
That's great.
I said, that's great, dude. Yeah. Like, we just trained for 6 months like a savage. Like, I'm good with that. Go be a fireman. You know, so like, sometimes it don't work out, but I want what's best for you all the time. And that's the thing with the masterclass and like what I'm doing. Like, I got somebody right now really special that I'm training for SEALs. And I talk to them twice a day right now because we're in the infancy of our relationship. But I will talk to them through this whole next 2.5 year period until they get their Trident, probably 3 or 4 times a week. And so this masterclass represents every one of those conversations. And so that's why I'm like, man, I'm super jacked about it. You know, I'm not trying to make a bunch of money on it. Like, initially I was trying to make a bunch of money, and now I'm just like, look, like, it's for the good of the people. I need to be able to pay my video dude to make the videos. But beyond that, like, you know, we're going to turn and burn. I told you what the ancillary benefit is. Like, I get this spreadsheet with all this talent on it. I got to tell you this one. So in the backyard, we got a barrel. It's imaginary. It's called the barrel. And every day there's new fish in that barrel. Mm. Every day I go out to the barrel and I look in the barrel and I say, there's a dude, minority, swimming around in the barrel with a 518 MCAT score, 97th percentile. And I fish the fish out the barrel and I put them in the holding pond. The holding pond got talent, like just full of talent. And so I talked to this young man. He wanted, you know, I said, hey, didn't have any direction. I didn't realize this. There's a tier one medical unit down at Bragg.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know about it.
Yeah.
He wants to go there. So we made some phone calls. He knew a dev group dude. Boom. I laid a plan out for him. 2 days later, he called me. There's a guy in Norfolk that went to Harvard that's going to Duke. Talk to him. He said, yo, we're going to Harvard. He'll go to Harvard Medical School. Had a 2-hour conversation with the guy at the tier one surgery unit. Said, as soon as you get set to the medical school, call me. We'll call the Army detailer. We'll get you an Army officer job. They'll pay for everything.
Woo! That's huge.
Woo! 2 days!
2 days. That's awesome.
But it all started with the guy, right? The dude was, he had everything he needed. He just needed to be shown the path, the great.
Yep. That's awesome.
That's all we're doing, Stu. We're trying to
love
just,
it.
Just like you, brother. We're trying to make everybody be successful when they get there and not be unprepared and fall on their face. Because I say this, you know this, Stu. I say 95% of the people get kicked out or fail out of SEAL training because they were completely unprepared at the very beginning of it. They had no idea. They weren't prepared.
They thought they were in shape. They didn't know what in shape was. They didn't know how the level of comfort you needed to in the water. You know, there's all these little things and how cold it is and, you know, getting negative feedback from instructors all the time. I mean, there's a lot to deal with that you have to just let roll off your back.
Hey, Stu, I had a question for you.
Yeah.
So all my guys are telling me you're pushing 830. Okay.
820.
820.
It's easy math. Okay. It's 500 yards in 500 seconds.
Okay.
It's a yard per second pace. Telling you, it's easy. I can still do it.
Yeah. 8:30 swimming. But what about the running?
I try to get everybody sub 9.
Okay, so you're the same as I am.
Yeah, just sub 9.
Sub 9.
Yeah, I mean even if you're sub 9 on the swim, that's fine. But I just do it for pure mathematical purposes when I'm swimming.
Absolutely.
I swim 100 yards. I should be at 100 seconds.
Absolutely.
200 yards, 200 seconds.
I love what you're doing because it's hard to, like, you and I both know, we know what it is and you can't explain it to other people, but like when you tell them you got to be running sub 9-minute mile, you're not going to make it, man. I don't know how you feel about this, but I tell everybody, like, you're not getting a buzz and get faster.
Nope.
No one shows up at buzz and gets faster. Everybody shows up.
No, or stronger. You get tougher.
Yeah.
That's all you do. You get tougher.
You get tougher.
That's it.
Yep. So, okay. That was my question for you. I'm like, because I know me, like I ran 8:46. That was my lifetime PR in a mile and a half.
That's
my resting heart rate was 34 beats a minute. I can't get in better condition than that.
Yeah. Like, that's good.
I got asthma pretty bad. Like that's my, like my life achievement was a 8:46 mile and a half.
That's good. So, especially at the end of a PST. That's really good.
Yeah. It was
A big fella. I mean, you're over 200. You never were under 200 pounds either. Yeah. That's the heavier you are, that comes with a price.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because when I was wrestling on the All Navy wrestling team, I talked to touched on it, but I was like 175 and I could run. Like I was like, I was like, look, if I go to Budge right now, it won't even be close. Like, will you let me go? She was like, no, you got 9 more months on this ship. Oof. No, you're not going nowhere. And so, you know, I went from 175 to 200, and we talked about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one, that 180 running,
different. Oh, it's so fun. Running. Yeah, yeah. All right, Jake. Well, man, I appreciate your time. It's a great story, great journey, you know, great things that you're still doing today. You know, you had some bumps in the road in the past. Learn from them. Now you're teaching people not to do them.
Absolutely, man.
That's gold.
Gold.
You know, that's gold.
I appreciate it, Stu, man. Truly, you know, I feel like, you know, and I'm doing a lot better job of avoiding them Detroit potholes that rip your tires off. But early on, man, you know, the first really, really, really everything smoothed out 42-ish, you know, 10 years ago. Like, I understand how I got to win. Like, I knew how to win back then, but I ruffled a lot of feathers. Now I understand how to win and just, you know, keep everything copacetic.
So, yeah, I'm pretty sure most men don't become adults until late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I'm with you too, though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you ahead of me 4 years, so.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy because that wisdom and knowledge, you know, you always hear that, like, you know, you go to old people for wisdom. And when you're younger, you're kind of like, yo, what do you know more than I know? And now at 49, I'm like, man, you know, like a lot of people comment in my stuff. If I had you when I was 22, my whole life would have been different. Yeah. And I tell them, if I had me when I was 30, my life would have been different, right? Like, if I had me when I was 35, 40, like, you know, just understanding like that little minutia that makes all the difference, you know?
Yeah, man.
And I appreciate what you're doing too, Stu. Like, you know, I told you, I've been a fan of yours this whole time. I thought you were Nate's brother.
Yeah.
You know, you straightened that out for me.
Yeah.
I thought both of y'all were brothers, had an admiral. And,
No.
I found out you not, so.
Yep. Grew up in Georgia, not
man.
Not California. All right, man. Well, once again, thanks again for your time. Keep in touch, and any new updates to this, and we'll move on. Maybe I'll have you on the Tactical Fitness Report, and we'll talk about some training ideas.
Woo! As well. Let's do it.
Yeah,
we can do fun. That, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know my ideas are kind of your ideas because we all came from the same place.
So. See how coaching, you know, we all coach. So, you know, we always learn something new whenever we get, you know, confronted with an issue, you know, one of our students is having. And sometimes that's how we get smarter, become better coaches. Whenever, you know, our students are having problems, we have to work through it with them. So, yeah, absolutely. Hey, man, thanks again. It was a great time having you. Those of you guys that listening, you know, Where can people find out more about Jake?
Super easy. You know, got YouTube channel all over the place on YouTube. LinkedIn, you know, I'm doing LinkedIn okay. I tell everybody, like, I'm super accessible. You just Google Jake Swig email. It's going to come up. You know, jakeswig.com or jakeswig.com is up now with the masterclass.
Oh, cool. Well, I'll put all those links in the description below, and we'll let people find you.
Yeah, finding me ain't hard. I tell you, like, I laugh at people to say I couldn't find you. I'm like, you
didn't try hard enough.
Yeah, you didn't use Google.
Because you out there.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Thank you so much, Stu.
Thank you.